Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
On today's episode, we are going to hear from Loretta Oberfeld, who is a 12-year survivor of breast cancer. Her impactful story will definitely leave you feeling hopeful and energized to face whatever health conditions you are facing currently. She wanted to give a big shout out to her husband and her family for all of their support throughout the past 12 years. Sit back and listen to Loretta. Here we go. Okay, well, welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. And today I'm so excited to talk with Loretta Oberfeld. She is a physical therapist. She works in the schools and she does telehealth with her own company. And she's a mom of two. And she's here to talk with us about some personal experiences. So Loretta, thank you so much for coming.
Yeah, thank you so much, Christine. I'm really honored and this is just such a fun experience. So I'm excited to share my personal experiences from, you know, my own healthcare journey, as well as being on the physical therapy side of things, working with all ages and primarily in schools, so school age kids and actually birth up through 21.
Excellent. I think that that's a unique perspective because not what you're going to talk about, I know no one would wish on themselves, but you have a very unique perspective to be able to empathize with families in a way that some other therapists may not have. And on this podcast, we are talking about all aspects of healthcare advocacy. So it's great to have both points of view. And I think people will definitely be able to identify with you either as a clinician or the experiences you went with your own health. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Absolutely. So I am, like I said, a physical therapist. I own my own company, which I just started this year, doing school-based physical therapy as well as some telehealth. So I've been experimenting with that a little. And I also do some health and wellness coaching on the side, just really encouraging, you know, that advocacy part and prevention through, you know, physical fitness and nutrition, all of that. I also have a history of, I was diagnosed actually with breast cancer. It'll be 12 years in April. So I'm 43 now. I was 31 at the time. My boys were 3 and 1. And to say it threw us for a loop is a complete understatement. We actually were living in Arizona at the time, which we are from Minnesota, which is where we live now. We had moved back as soon as I found out that I was diagnosed because we just needed family and support and all of that that goes with that, plus amazing healthcare in Minnesota. So we pretty much packed it up and left within a week and came home. So, you know, being diagnosed that young, I had no family history. I found it myself. I was on a journey of weight loss after baby. Like I said, my baby, you know, my youngest literally had just turned 1 right when I got diagnosed. And in that experience of losing weight, doing self-exams, I found a lump that I, you know, and as a PT, you think there's so many things that can go through your head. Is it muscle? Is it, you know, is this a, just something else, a strange lump or whatever? But I went in, I got it checked out. It turns out it was a very large 7-centimeter precancerous tumor and ended up doing a double mastectomy. I did chemo for hard chemo for 6 months, and then another 6 months of just some other infusions. And then I did medications for 10 years, which I just finished this last year. So it's been quite a journey. And when you're that young with breast cancer, no family history, I was hormone positive, which there's a whole gamut of things, you know, what that all means, positive, negative hormones. So it was a very rare type of cancer. It was just stage 1. They found some lymph nodes that had some trace cells in it. So that was a big debate at the time because there wasn't a lot of research on a 31-year-old female with no history with hormone-positive cancer. So I was kind of a guinea pig. And my oncologist even, she went to her board at the university and they debated it, what I should do. Should I do chemo? Should I not? That was really hard. And it was a hard decision to make because, of course, you're getting a ton of opinions from everybody and you just have to really do what's best for you and what you feel most comfortable with. So we chose to do chemo. And amazingly, I went through it fairly well considering, and I'm just grateful for the healthcare that I had during that time and moving forward.
Wow. That's incredible to think of how young you were. And I can't even imagine how scared you must have felt as a 31, two young children, not expecting this. Like, that's not what you, I'm sure when you went to the doctor's appointment, did you think anything?
No. And you know, they did a biopsy and that led to more tests and that led to more tests. And, you know, I remember sitting down with my doctor and my husband was actually out of town when I was at the doctor. So my cousin, who was like a sister to me, was there with me. And she just looked at me, the doctor did. And she said, it's 7 centimeters. We're going to need to do a mastectomy. Mm-hmm. And it was just on one side. And yeah, I mean, you can't even prepare yourself for that. So I just prayed a lot. And, you know, I actually decided to do a double the next day. I called her up and said, let's just do it. I'm done. You know, we would have loved to have more children, but you know, God is telling us something right now that we need to just follow whatever that crazy plan is. So,
right. Yeah. That's incredible. Like to hear those words that that's what you need to do, like going in there, not expecting that information. Like that's, I think one of the hardest things as a patient and then just to not have any preparation for what they're going to tell you. Mm-hmm. But your cousin was able to be supportive for you.
Yes.
That's great.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, and I really think, you know, I'm working on the other side of it now while I was working as a PT in schools then too, but we work with so many children and so many families that they have these tiny, perfect little human beings. And, you know, either they know something is coming through their pregnancy, something didn't go right, or, you know, these babies are born perfectly normal, typical, everything's going well, and then things start going not so well. So seeing that through the eyes of the parents, just not knowing and, you know, not knowing what to expect. What are they going to be like when they're adults? Or what, you know, what does this mean for our family? And it just, through it all, I just, you know, I think there is a purpose and a plan for everything, no matter what. Even if we don't understand it, and even if it's a horrible, awful thing, to me, my journey has given me so much more awareness of total health and wellness, the importance of living every day to its fullest. Does that mean every day is great? No, not really. But it also means that we do things that we, you know, maybe would have waited for. We travel a lot with our kids. We try to do a lot of different experiences. You know, just life is just too short. And I always, you know, I've got to rate my kitchen, even though I'm a health and wellness, you know, nutrition freak. It says life is short, eat dessert first, because no day is ever promised. So I just, you know, really try to relay that to others. Just, you know, you only get one chance. And to be not always the picture perfect vision of health and wellness, but to have that balance. You know, you can still have balance and have fun and, you know, just really do your best with what you can control, because there's a lot that you can't.
Right. Yeah, that is also a interesting balance between like understanding what you do have control over and what you don't have control over, but yet even in those things that you don't have control over, being able to trust that you're making good decisions, kind of going with your intuition of what's best for you at that time. I wonder, going back to like the kids that you work with now, do you feel like you talk or use different words or explain things differently to parents than maybe you would have in the past after this experience?
Definitely. And, you know, just that advocacy part of things, especially if it's new young parents, it's their first baby and they've got all of these things that went wrong and they don't know what to do, to just really lean on that support system of your family, for one, and two, to not be afraid to ask questions and ask for the best doctors, the best surgeons, ask for second opinions. I tell that to anybody that's newly diagnosed with breast cancer or any type of, you know, major illness. You have to stay on top of things. You have to, and even as a medical professional, I know things get pushed to the back. I know that doctors don't always have time and that things have priority over others. And you have to be the one that's calling them saying, okay, where are we at? What are we doing? What, you know, what's the next step? And if you don't know, then who does? Who can I talk to that knows? And that's okay.
Yes. To keep yourself organized through that process, did you use a journal? Did you have a notebook? What tool did you use?
Yes. Awesome question. Yes. I did bring a journal with me every time. I sometimes would voice record the doctor visits. I always brought somebody with me because, especially when it's you personally that is dealing with this, you cannot hear anything. I mean, it's just, you're in a tunnel. And even to this day, I feel like it was just a bad dream. Like, it's so surreal that it even happened. So, and I cannot even imagine what it's like as a parent to hear that. So to always have somebody with you that can be that other person that's taking notes, that's listening for you, staying organized with binders. I have some parents that, and I did this myself too, just keeping a accordion file of things that you bring with you. And yeah, it sounds like a lot of work, but it's going to save you a ton of time and just keep yourself organized, especially with all the appointments, because there'll be a ton and it's hard to keep track.
Right. Hold on. That's great. That's so important to have a system. And even if you have started this process and do not have a system yet, it's not too late. Get that accordion file. That's a really good idea, to have somebody with you, even if it is a friend or a neighbor, if you don't have a family member that can go with you. It might even be better to have someone who's not so emotionally attached.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it is. It's that emotional piece that starts kind of decreasing how much information you can really take in. So someone that's a little bit more removed from the situation. But voice recording also, you know, technology today, everybody has their smartphone, and just to hit voice record, because one, if you want to go back and ask a question of the doctor, you can listen to it. If you're trying to write things down, you may miss it. So I think those are really good strategies that you use, Loretta.
Thank you. Yeah. And to have your questions written down too. I tell all of my patients that, you know, write them down before, because you know that doctor's got 14.6 minutes to talk to you and they're already thinking about the next person that they're moving on to. So I always tell them, sit in front of the door and have your questions written down. So then you get, you know, because I do this all the time. You go to a doctor's visit and you think, okay, I need to remember to ask this and that, whatever. And then you forget. And then you play phone tag with the nurse for 2 weeks to get those questions answered. So yeah. And I love, you know, now that through the online communication system with doctors, through your healthcare system, that's really nice too, because you can go back and get the after visit summaries. And if you want, you know, you can print them off and email your doctors and all of that, just to really be communicating with them. It's really important.
It is very important. And I also tell my patients to write the questions down. I'll even say that if they're feeling crunched for time or the doctor's kind of rushing them, to hand them that paper and say, go ahead and email me back, or you know, write down the answers for me. And in case there's no reason why you, the patient, should feel like you're being rushed out the door and that you can't get your answers, the questions to your answers. So
right.
there's a way that we can get that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the second opinion thing too is also really important. I mean, I know myself as a physical therapist, I'll tell my patients straight out, if you don't like what I'm doing, if you want to get a second opinion like that, I encourage you to do that. Mm-hmm. And I hope that all the doctors that you're seeing also would feel the same way. We shouldn't feel as patients that we're letting down the doctor or not trusting them. Like, this is our own lives, and no yep. one else is going to advocate for you like you will. And right. you mentioned that your oncologist actually went to her board to help her make these decisions. I'm going to guess that that's probably a practice that she personally does a lot. Mm-hmm. But if it seems like, you know, you're wondering why my doctor isn't going and seeking out the answers, what would you tell a patient in that situation?
That's a tricky one. You know, I guess I'm a big research person, and, you know, from my own experience, my doctor thankfully was very much into research, and she had to be because there weren't a lot of me, you know, to study from and to have the experience with. So that's a very good question. I guess I would just ask the doctor, you know, where are you getting this information from? What are your sources? What is your experience with this? Is there somebody that you know that would be willing to talk to me? Obviously, there's HIPAA concerns with that, but a lot of times, like, I know through families that I work with, if their children have similar diagnoses, I get permission from both of them, say, hey, do you mind, you know, share this experience with somebody else and see what, if you're getting the same treatment or, you know, seeing the same doctors or different doctors, if there's something that they're missing. And I know that, and I won't say this to do this, but there's a lot of information on the internet. Be careful. I, of course, as a healthcare professional, went straight to the internet and started reading, and I had to stop. So you have to really take that with a grain of salt too, because it's not necessarily correct information. And there's a lot of online groups that are support groups and things. I know a lot of families that I work with are on a ton of Facebook groups and things like that, which I think are amazing, but to also guard that and take it with a grain of salt, because it's could be somebody's opinion and not actual medically based practice.
Yes. But the reason why we're going to the internet is because it is so accessible. And yeah. this is what I think we as healthcare professionals are missing. And I have some solutions for the kids that we work with in this regard, but I think if doctors, healthcare professionals could make more time or could allow for that more accessibility, then we would have less people relying on the internet solely. I think the internet has lots of information, but then what do we do with that information?
Right. So, right. I agree.
We got to come take it and come back to your healthcare team and ask those questions. And like you said, communicate.
Yes.
So, you know, if you had a friend in a similar situation, it sounds like you have given some advice to people who've been newly diagnosed with cancer. What is the main thing that you're telling them from the get-go?
Trust your gut. And, you know, for me, it was, you know, something's just not right and it's scary. And I maybe don't want to know the answer, but you need to trust your gut, even if it's something, and I don't ever, you know, want people to falsify things just so that they can get in to see a doctor. But if you ever, ever, especially with breast cancer, feel like something is wrong, you need to go in. Just because for me, the way my cancer was, I was 31 and it would have been very aggressive and I would not be here today.
Yes. And I know of a girl who is not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sorry. I mean, it's crazy. I remember my doctor saying, you know, when we were in the big chemo debate, and my surgeon said, he's like, okay, think about this. He said, I know you don't want to do chemo, but do you want to walk your kids down the aisle? Do you want to see them graduate? Do you, I mean, it was just like, wow, mm-hmm. you know, and you just have to go with your gut instinct. And it, like I said, you have to trust the plan because there is a bigger purpose for us that we don't know. And, you know, seek out the answer, seek out support, make sure that you're surrounded by people that you love and will care for you no matter what. And they'll take your kids for you when you're doing treatments. You know, my family, my sister especially, was great with that. They just took them, you know. I also tell them to, again, ask for more opinions, ask for the research behind it. Go to the best doctors. I don't care if it's out of your network, if it's, you're going to have to pay for it. I get it. It's expensive. Thank God we had an amazing friends and family that threw a huge benefit for us, because it is expensive. And don't be afraid to ask for help, because you're going to need it and you don't even realize what you need, but you're going to need it.
And for the people who are offering help, what would you say to those people who want to help somebody, but maybe don't want to bring up a bad situation to the person? Like, just what do you need, or how should they approach that situation with you?
Yeah, I get that question a lot from friends of, you know, people that were just diagnosed or going through breast cancer or any of that. And my number one advice is, don't be afraid to bring it up. Don't be afraid to talk about it. The worst thing you can do is ignore it and not talk about it. And because it just makes it awkward, and you just need to put it out there and just say, hey, I have no idea what you're struggling with. I'm here to support you. I'm not going to ignore you, because you do. You kind of go off the face of the earth for a while, and it's hard to talk about with people. Just show up for them. Bring them meals, do stuff that they're not going to ask for help usually. So, you know, give them a gas card, because they're going to have a ton of miles back and forth to the doctor. Just be generous and take their kids for them, because that's the worst thing to do, is to try to find childcare and you feel guilty already. And, you know, don't assume that they don't want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, you know, we had a Caring Bridge website, which I think it's still there. I haven't been on it a long time, but that was amazing, because when I was diagnosed, that really was, I mean, I had a cell phone, but it's hard to say the same things over and over and over again. So if you can put it all in one place, everybody can read it, they can respond to you, you know, they can support you that way. That's a really nice way to do it without physically having to speak all day long, because it does get exhausting, even though it's amazing and you need to do it. But, and you have that as a record, you know, of your journey. It's basically a journal. So,
okay. And it's not like Facebook, as far as, it's not that public. People need to be invited to it. Then of course there's Meal Train. That if you are somebody who wants to organize something like that for somebody, you can organize Meal Train or other giving, I can't think of, like, a GoFundMe. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of things that you can start as a way to support somebody.
Yes, absolutely.
So what about the healthcare system in regards to either cancer treatment or just the way you were able to access care, or anything you want to talk about?
That's a loaded question. especially seeing both sides of it, but, you know, being the patient and the provider, but it's so backwards. Oh. I'm just going to say it. It's so backwards. Even as the PT, like, I'm a PT, and our job is to fix it after it's broken, mm-hmm. not prevent it from getting broken. So, although now, thankfully, more healthcare professionals are going that way, but, you know, same thing with insurance. You know, you, like, for us, both my husband and I now are self-employed, so we don't get health insurance through our work. And, you know, you don't qualify for some insurances, but it's too expensive to have family insurance this way. I mean, it's so backwards. And, you know, even when I worked in the clinic, you bill so much for things, but you only get paid so much. So it's like everything is so overinflated just to get a little bit back, that, and all we're doing is fixing what's broken rather than preventing it from being broken. So that's where I've really shifted. And, you know, just my whole journey has opened my eyes to, okay, wait a minute. You need to try to prevent the problem rather than fix it later. So, you know, and there's just, it's a huge, huge problem. And just the state of the nutrition in our world and fast food, and we're just stressed out and busy and, you know, basically living in survival mode. And then, you know, feeding ourselves things that aren't serving us. And, you know, I could go off on a whole other tangent on that. But anyways, that is where people really need to be an advocate for themselves. You do have control over what you do with your life on a daily basis, and it's about making choices. So are those always going to be good ones? No. But you can make good choices most of the time.
Agreed. And these lifestyle choices are absolutely things that we have control over. And we make choices all the time anyway. We make good choices for ourselves, but for some reason, when it comes to food and exercise and sleep, those don't seem to have as high as a priority as other choices that we make. Mm-hmm. And I think, I wonder if people, because it is something that we do every day, multiple times per day with eating, that it's just, it's always there. If people put a lower value on that, because it just seems like it's just food.
Right. Right.
But it makes a difference.
It does. And, you know, with my own journey too, you know, you really can't be more toxic than having chemo go through your body for 6 months, you know, and what I learned about nutrition after that, and just through my own experiences with trying to be healthy, which is what I thought was healthy, it really wasn't. And if you're not paying attention to what you're putting in your body and how you're moving it and taking care of it, it's just a slippery slope. It really is. And, you know, for me, my cancer was not genetic. I did all the genetic tests. I had no family history of it, maybe very, very distant, or it was a relative that, you know, we weren't blood related. So obviously not genetic, but you have control of what you do on a daily basis. And that's your choice, especially as an adult. And it's just so, I can't even express the importance of that.
Right.
You know?
Yes. And I wonder, some people, whether or not those people are listening to us now or not, that they choose, or they think that it's not going to happen to them, or they think it hasn't happened to me so far, or if I live long enough, I'm going to get cancer anyway. So what is the right point?
Right. And I, you know, and that's the other part of it too, where, you know, I talk about the balance part, like you have to live too. You can't live in that fear. All of us are going to get something sometime. Something's going to happen, but we can control the life that we're living in right now. I'm guilty of always looking forward, like, what if, you know, what are we going to plan next? Where are we going? And it's like, you know, you really need to just be present and be thankful for what you have today.
Very true. That's something that all of us can absolutely learn from. And unfortunately, or maybe fortunately for you, you had to go through that experience to understand that. You don't need to go through that experience to understand it.
Right.
You can be able to kind of get that sense that today is important and living your best for today is important. And I think we don't have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Like, you don't have to be like, oh, I can't have any sweets, or, you know, it is that balance. It is finding that what eat for enjoyment. But does that mean that every single meal, every single day, you're
right.
Processed foods? And another thing I hear a lot, well, the FDA approves it.
Yeah, no. Okay. Yep. And, you know, you look at the food pyramids and they're so skewed, and they are based off of very little research. And it's more about the companies that are providing the funding for these food pyramids. So, yeah, I mean, it's just,
Yes, there's a lot of history to the dietary recommendations of the in the United States beginning in the 60s and 70s, and a lot, and absolutely it comes down to lobbyists and who has the money.
Right.
And that history, if you're interested, Michael Pollan has written many books about that. There's like you said, Loretta, there this change is a happening in the on the consumer side, I feel. And on the practitioner side too, we're starting to become more aware of just how impactful nutrition is on chronic disease. And back to your point about, it wasn't a genetic factor for you, but you had a healthy enough lifestyle that you were resilient enough to come back from this. And you also had early detection, which was incredibly important. Because like you said, if this wasn't found until stage 3 or stage 4, this outcome might have been very different. So yes. I think, you know, even if there is a disease process that is going to happen, or you have a predisposition for an autoimmune disease or some sort of disease, if you are resilient from the get-go, from the beginning, you're going to be able to handle the stress and the different medications that you have to take a lot better than if you're starting from a lower spot.
Right.
Yes. So now for health, for self-care, what do you do? It sounds like you do a lot, but what are the main things that you focus on for your own self now?
I do, a few things every day that I put as a priority, and I get up early. I get my exercise in. I move at least 30 minutes a day. I work out from home because we live in the middle of nowhere and the nearest gym is at least 30 minutes away. And so I do all my exercise at home. I write in a gratitude journal every day, 3 to 5 things, little things, not, you know, I'm thankful. Obviously I'm thankful for my family, but my family, house, all of that, but it's, I'm thankful that I have a warm bed that I slept in last night. I'm thankful that, you know, I have a cup of coffee that I can drink after this. I have, you know, just those little things. And that makes a huge difference, just living in that state of gratitude all the time versus I wish I had that. I wish, you know, I could do all this, which I do plenty of that too, but I have to center myself and, you know, start off my day with gratitude. That nutrition piece is key. I can't even express that enough. I know when I'm having a bad day, I'm a stress eater. So I need to plan for that. And I know healthy alternatives for that now. I know that, yes, I can still have chocolate. Yes, I can still do this and whatever. And I know that I have the means, the resources, the nutrition, and the background to get back on track if I, you know, have a bad day or whatever. But, you know, I try to really fuel myself with the right nutrition, lots of water. I try to drink at least a gallon every day. Doesn't always happen. Sleep. And I hate to say the word Nazi, but my friends call me a sleep Nazi. I'm in bed asleep by 9 o'clock almost every night, and I'm up early. So I'm an early bird. But that's my thing. So it might not be for everybody, but you know, you have to, sleep is the key next to nutrition for everything.
Right.
Because it can really make or break you, honestly.
Absolutely. And I think what I hear you saying overall is that you do have a routine, you have a structure that you follow. That's definitely going to help you stay in this flow of good habits if you have this structure. Like you said, you know, not everybody is an early bird, but to have a sleep routine that's going to get you at a minimum your 6 hours, 7 hours, 8 hours, whatever you feel that you need to function well, not just, you know, getting by. And the gratitude journal is great. If you don't have a gratitude journal, if you don't do any journaling right now, sometimes thinking about things that you're grateful for in your life may be hard. So I always tell people to think about what they're grateful for in somebody else, or like, what did they see yesterday that they think somebody else had joy? So if you really are in a spot that you can't think of something that brings your own life joy right now, look outside of yourself and identify joy, happiness, kindness, gratitude, in others and then work yourself back.
That's great. I love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it's really hard if you are in a space of mind where, why is this happening to me now? Mm-hmm. Nothing is going right for me now. Just having positive thoughts,
that's hard.
It is hard.
It can be really hard. Yep.
So, but it's easier to find it in somebody else. Just like the same thing as, you know, as a physical therapist, I can dole out very good advice on parenting to other people's families, but in my own house, it's a challenge. I definitely have found some ways to make that easier, but I noticed early on that I had a lot of good things to say for other people.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, that's, you know, what an incredible story, Litter. I've been jotting down notes the whole time to kind of put a recap in the show notes. And you've really hit on so many great topics. Was there anything else that you wanted to discuss or bring up or let our audience know?
I don't think so. You know, I appreciate the opportunity to speak because, you know, especially as a young mother at the time, and, you know, really we were just, you don't know what's coming. You never know. And every day is a blessing. It truly is. And I will never say that cancer was a gift to me because I like nice presents, not, you know, bad ones, but it did open my eyes. And that is why I do what I do. And, you know, I was a PT before on that, you know, fix it after it's broken cycle. And it just really shifted how I live my life, how my family lives their life. We have fun, but we, you know, do our best most of the time, make good choices. I tell my kids that every single day, make good choices most of the time. And that will usually answer most issues or questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. That's great too, to be able to forgive yourself or to be able to understand that it's not going to be perfect every day, that we can strive and have a plan. And if we fall short of meeting our expectations, go to sleep that night, get back up the next day and begin again.
But it's absolutely.
A lot of this too, sounds like you have a pretty healthy mindset, that you, even if in the days that you were feeling down or sad, that you didn't ignore those feelings, that you acknowledged what was happening, reached out to friends and family, because that, even though those emotions are hard to feel, you have to feel them. And it, just like anything in life, it takes practice. And if you're somebody out there who's feeling in a spot right now that you're sad or down or really kind of feeling hopeless, reach out to people.
That's
the last thing you want to do.
Right. Yes. And I am one, I was, you know, I'm very independent. I've always done everything myself. And, you know, even looking back, I'm was obviously not in the same place that I am now with, you know, my attitude of gratitude, because I was a born sarcastic person. I just have always been like, oh, you know, I'm just going to do it myself and I don't need help. And, it's hard to change that. And, you know, to see the positive versus the negative and to just trust the plan, trust the plan. I say that to myself a lot. Even when things are going well. And I've done a lot of professional or personal development on that too, in my journey, and just realizing that most things you don't have control over, but there are a lot of things that you do, and choosing to be positive versus negative and choosing to be present versus perfect or looking ahead. And, you know, what if, mm-hmm. what if you're not here tomorrow?
Mm-hmm. Right. So all we have is right now. Question.
Yep.
Do you have a mentor, or do you have someone, an advisor or someone that you either reached out to in the past for, to help with that personal development, or that more just independent reading and.
More independent reading, you know, with the company that I'm aligned with, our nutrition company, we have a lot of, they align us with a ton of personal development. Brendon Burchard, Tony Robbins came and spoke for us one year. I do a lot of Rachel Hollis. She's, you know, always awesome, and listen to a lot of podcasts. I do a lot of driving for my job, so I do a lot of listening. And who are some other ones? I guess those probably would be my top four at the moment, but I'm always open to new suggestions. And
yeah, no, that's great. I think that, again, just kind of recognizing that you don't have to have all the answers,
and right,
it's okay that you need help right now. To acknowledge that you need help and seek that out. Just take that first step to reach out. We need connections.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think that that probably had a lot to do with your healing as well. Being able to recognize in your, that self, that that interpersonal experience is important.
Yes, absolutely. We live in a very small town, small community, and we had been away from that community for about 3 years when we moved back. And we came back to the most amazing support. They threw a huge benefit. I mean, literally kept us out of bankruptcy, honestly. And so grateful for that every day. And that just that unconditional support of having a small town, it's amazing. And that was before Facebook, really. That was before, you know, people did a ton of benefits and all that stuff. And it's just like, oh my gosh, it would be so different now. You know, not necessarily better or worse, but it would just be different. Right. But that support system is always the main people that are the same, no matter what platform that looks like.
That's true. I think that's good. Those, your support network is there. And even on Facebook, I mean, gosh, the reach of Facebook is enormous, but mm-hmm. we still need to engage with people. I mean, I'm talking with you here today because of an engagement that we started on Facebook 6 months ago.
Right.
But if it was, is it just me liking your posts or pictures, that doesn't get us anywhere.
Yeah.
Have to reach, yep. Still have to reach out, whether we're doing it in person or online.
Absolutely.
Great. It was so wonderful to talk with you, Loretta, and for you to share your story, and such an amazing story. Just again, the struggles that you had gone through and were able to move through and past. Congratulations on all that, honestly.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our listeners, and tune into our next episode. Will be released soon. And thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to tell you all about a volunteer organization that I started about 6 weeks ago. It's called Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support, and it is a phone hotline for parents who are in the hospital with their kiddos, either after a surgery or maybe in the NICU or just with an illness. And parents who are staying in the hospital with their kids feel alone. They feel like it is such a dark time. There really isn't anybody that they can talk to. Even other parents who are in the hospital at the same time with them really just keep to themselves because everybody's dealing with so much, but all these parents want is connection. So I started, with the help of Kristen Parsons, a volunteer organization, and we are looking for volunteers. We are also looking for donations. Right now we're not a 501(c)(3) nonprofit. We're just doing this kind of on our own right now. But one of the ways that I'm going to get donations is via this podcast. So I want as many listeners as I can get on this podcast. So let me know what information you want to hear about healthcare advocacy. Please share this podcast out on social media. You'll be doing myself and families a big favor to get this into hospitals across the nation. So again, Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support. We're looking for volunteers to be part of our phone bank. If you need some support, you can definitely reach out to me, and I'll have the link to the phone number for the phone bank. Thank you.